I'm Deirdre Fitzpatrick, and this is Dying to Ask the Road to Paris. Today's podcast is about one of the most popular sports at the Olympics. Do you recognize that sound? It is one of the few sports where the women are more popular, more watched, and more sponsored than the men. We're talking about gymnastics. And today, we're focusing on Riley Luce. He is one of the top-ranked men's gymnasts on the U.S. national team. Now, five guys ultimately will represent Team USA on the men's gymnastics team. Riley, rank-wise, right now as we tape this, is third for the men after a two-day tournament called Winter Cup. So, still a few months before the final selection being made, but Riley is exactly where he says he wants to be training-wise. He grew up in Folsom, California, just outside of Sacramento. He's a 2023 graduate of Stanford University. And 2024, because he finished college, is all about the Olympics. It's all about the preparation and trying to get there. So the good news for him is that he is still training with his teammates at Stanford. And that is crucial because Stanford may be Team USA's secret weapon in Paris.
Stanford's basically the feeder system to Team USA men's gymnastics. And we've created this team atmosphere and culture that we all hold each other accountable, and we are very intense but super just friendly and brotherly to one another. So we basically have created this culture through Tom's help, like our head coach, where nothing goes undone.
That head coach is Tom Galimi. Tommy spent the last couple of weekends out at some Stanford gymnastics meets. Thank you, Tommy, for doing that. Two of the guys that he talked with are current Stanford students and national team members, Coy Young and Asher Hong. Now, both of them also, just like Riley, said culture is the key. But so is fun, and it's clearly working because in 2023, Stanford won its fourth consecutive NCAA championship title, and nearly half of the 20 roster men's national team have a Stanford tie.
I want them to have a great experience, and I think there's no better way than to win a championship while you're here.
Both those guys said that you make training fun. How do you do that?
Interesting that they would say that. I think I need to reevaluate how I'm coaching if they're saying no. Well, the sport's dynamic and exciting. There's always another flip, another twist you can add, a different combination. It's limitless. That's one of the things that got me into the sport was not just the thrill seeker in me and the adrenaline addict, but the infinite possibilities that can be put together when you're training. So, I think they've grabbed onto that. It's also very technical. Have a great foundation in multiple areas.
I'm just dying to ask, we're sitting down with Riley Luce. Kind of rare because this guy is always flipping, tumbling, and twisting. It is a deep dive into a culture of accountability. How do you make people feel comfortable and safe enough that you can call them out when they're not giving their best? I mean, these are incredible lessons for leaders, parents, or anybody who wants to raise the bar around them. Female Olympic gymnasts are rock stars. These guys, not as much. How that factors into their training and their opportunities beyond the mat. And Riley is a big bendy deal on TikTok. The one video that led to him creating a following that is now more than 250,000 people and counting, and the opportunities that have come his way because of his TikTok account. Riley Luce is my guest on this Dying to Ask the Road to Paris. Olympians, they're just different. Sure, they're fitter and faster, but they're mentally different too. Because when the body breaks down, the Olympic mindset takes over. I'm Deirdre Fitzpatrick, and I've traveled to 10 Olympics for Hearst Television with my partner, Mike Domolog. But Tommy and I were home for the last two games because of the pandemic. But this summer, the Olympics are back in all their glory, and we're going to Paris. Fans in the stands, the full athlete experience, and it's Paris! The end. Join us for the backstories of how Team USA gets to the top of a podium and how you can add a little Olympic edge in your life. Riley Luce, thanks for joining us on the Dying to Ask podcast. It's nice to see you.
Yeah, it's great to be here. I'm excited for it.
You had a really good month. You just got back from Winter Cup, where you had a performance and a result that definitely puts you into a good place for the next few months.
Yes. I just got back from Nationals Winter Cup, and I got the bronze in the all around. And that's a really good place to be because five people make the Olympic team. So being in that top five range is always incredible. And so very blessed, very excited, but I definitely have more in the tank. So
which is good because you still have a few more months to go before the final team is selected. How does it actually work? You mentioned that the top five make the team. What's the process then for the next couple of months?
Oh yeah. So for the next 2 months, I'll be going to international competitions in Germany and Colombia. These will be team competitions, and those are very important to have on an Olympic year, just international experience, so that they're not just sending somebody who hasn't traveled and competed before. But so the process for making the Olympic team is we have four competitions that matter. And well, we have two competitions that matter, but 4 days of competition. And these are in end of May and June. It's the US Championships and Olympic Trials. And basically, the team is going to be comprised of the top team scoring scenario of your average scores from these four competitions. It's pretty complicated, but we actually helped create the algorithm at Stanford, which is really fun.
Of course you did.
We didn't cheat or anything, but we helped decide how we wanted to do it. So there are a few different scenarios, but basically at US Championships and Olympic Trials, we have to lock in and do our best gymnastics.
Isn't it crazy that most of the US Olympic team is not picked until less than a month before you guys go?
Yeah, I think it's picked 2 weeks before we travel to Paris. So that is incredible. And it's scary, but once you get past that point, it's just all guts and glory.
Yeah, that's the goal anyway. What a crazy situation for families, because I've talked to a lot of Olympic parents over the years, and a lot of times their kids will say, don't book anything because I don't want you to jinx me, or don't make too many plans because it's too much pressure. What do most families do?
Yes.
Or have you said, don't tell me?
I actually learned kind of what happens. So the USA delegation gets seating and like tickets to the event, not flights, but tickets to the event in ahead of time. And you kind of sign up for those in process. They email all prospective athletes. And so you can at least get that. But yeah, I don't want anyone to buy any flights or anything beforehand, because that I'm slightly superstitious and things like that kind of get me in my head.
Yeah, most athletes are. And I think I am as well. So I totally relate to that.
Yeah.
You graduated from Stanford last year, and I would imagine like timing is everything for an athlete. You want to peak in all the different kinds of ways, and not having to worry about school or a senior year in an Olympic year is such a gift.
Yes, it is the best decision I've made in a long time. It was a really hard decision to make. I really loved being on the Stanford men's gymnastics NCAA team, but I kind of wanted to prioritize this year because of my Olympic aspirations. And it's just been so amazing because the school part is just so taxing on you. My degree was management science and engineering, and it was just very taxing, a lot of math, just using my brain more than I should have, because gymnastics already uses my brain so much. I'm just living the dream right now, living in Palo Alto, training at Stanford, but not having to do any classes. So it's great.
Yeah, that's nice not to have to go home and do math homework at the end of a long training day.
I don't miss that.
I bet you don't. Stanford is interesting because Stanford has basically become the feeder to Team USA men's gymnastics. What is it about Stanford that has made the team so good, and that you have so many guys from the national team who have these Stanford ties?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, everybody on Stanford's team just really wants to win. And we have this system of accountability on the team, starting from the coaches to the assistant coaches to the captains to the event leaders, to the everyone else on the team. And there's just this system of accountability where if someone's not doing their job, they'll be helped out, or they'll be yelled at, or they'll be friendly told to do one more, you know? And that's just what's so beautiful about the culture at Stanford is if something goes wrong, like someone else will be there to fix it. And if one person falls, the next person will stop the bleeding. And that's just the whole culture. And it's not as cutthroat as it may seem. It's really friendly. We're all brothers. And it's honestly, I never go into the gym and don't come out laughing at least 20 times because those guys are so funny and they're so smart. They're Stanford kids. They're so witty. So
I've heard that you guys have a thing called make four, do eight, which I think I have two boys at home, two teenage boys. I think I'm going to make this like a thing in my house. Can you explain what that is?
Yeah. So on any event or, and yeah, any assignment we have, you basically have to make four really good skills, like of one skill. You have to make four really good ones, or you have to do eight. And so basically, if you don't do really well, you're going to have to do double the numbers on anything you do. So that in itself is, it makes guys feel very accountable to show up every single day so that they don't tax their bodies so much that they get hurt. Like if you do four good ones, you're done. But if not, you do eight. And if you miss that, then you may have to do a basic on the skill and do it again. So,
I mean, it's that whole idea of not practice makes perfect, but perfect practice too, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like intent over just going through the motions. You have to, for gymnastics, you just kind of have to lock in mentally in order to just do a skill as well as you can do it.
Gymnastics is way more of a mental game than I think most people realize. Can you explain to people what it is about it that is so much fun once you really understand what's going on?
Yeah, I mean, wait, so you want to know about the mental game or just...
Yeah, I think I want to know about like just even like the strategy part of it, because you already mentioned like math, doing math homework. You're constantly as a gymnast doing math.
Yeah. I love to say that this sport's 90 to 95% mental. Like, sure, it's so hard physically, but if you don't know how to compete, or if you don't know how to kind of categorize your mind to not be scared that you're 20 feet in the air, but also point your feet. Like, if you don't learn to mentally categorize, that's what I like to say, like what you're doing, then it doesn't matter how hard you train, it won't end up working out. So that's why I say it's so mental, but it's so fun, this sport, because you're always trying to see what's the optimal level of difficulty, which is how hard the skills you do, and the execution, which is how well you do the skills. Because ultimately that's what makes your score go up, is the highest difficulty you can do with the highest execution. But for me, say I do a really hard routine, I'll do it worse, and then my score will end up being the same. But if I do a easier routine that's really clean, then that might be the highest score. So you're always thinking of the most optimal way to compete and what's going to get you the highest score. Because ultimately, like, what chooses the Olympic team is an algorithm of scores. Mm-hmm. So it's very, very mental, very analytical, very strategical. It's really cool.
Is that decision of which... what to do on a competition day, is that made before you even get there, or is some of that made that day based on what you're seeing, how you're feeling, and other non-tangibles?
Usually it's decided beforehand. If you're very prepared for a competition, you should know that you're going to do what you want to do. But say at a NCAA competition, your knee hurts and you don't want to do the extra double flip that you usually do. You just have to be smart and make sure you know the rules. And of course, though, we do adjust because we compete so often. We don't always do our highest difficulty routines. But yeah, it's a lot of adjustments. Sometimes it even happens on the fly where you make a mistake and have to keep going. And that's also where it gets mental, is did I get credit for that, or should I do it again? It's actually really fun.
Yeah. And probably, I would imagine, pretty stressful for your family as they're watching.
Oh, they're always so stressed.
Tell me about that.
They're probably more stressed than me, definitely. They
always.
My mom says every time after a competition, she has to replay the whole competition in her head because she was so wired the whole time, and she never sleeps after that. So funny.
You know, it's interesting. You don't actually come from a family where you had a ton of gymnasts in the family. Your dad played water polo at Stanford, completely different. Yeah. And you did a lot of sports before you found gymnastics. How did you actually end up in gymnastics?
Yeah, so I always did baseball, soccer, and basketball growing up, which all I'm glad I didn't end up there because I'm so short. But when the Olympics came around in 2008 in Beijing, we turned on the TV and it was on gymnastics, and there was a gymnast on the rings, and he was doing a skill where he was holding himself up on his arms, which is, I know now, called a planche. And I was like, wow, I want to do that. That's like incredible. It looks so cool. So after that, I just went in to the nearest gymnastics gym, which was Technique Gymnastics. This was actually a few months after I watched that. And I was met by Guard Young, an Olympic silver medalist. And I was like, well, he's an Olympian? Like, this is great. I'm going to be an Olympian. I'm going to Technique Gymnastics. And so ever since then, I stayed in gymnastics forever. I quit every other sport.
And what is it about it that you love so much?
It's just my life. Like, it's exactly who I am as a person in a sport. Like, I love analyzing. I like overanalyzing, to be honest. I love math. I love pushing my body to the limits. I love defying gravity. And it's just such a friendly community as well. Like, smaller sports are that way, I'd say. Everyone just is fighting for the sport to stay alive, and they're so grateful for doing it every day. And that's just kind of how I like to go about life. I'm just so grateful for everything that I've gotten the opportunity to do. And so with the community and just everything I love, the sport's just my life, and I don't know what I'd do without it.
Is there much crossover between the men's and the women's teams?
At Stanford, we train together. So we do see each other work and struggle. But no, honestly, they're very different sports. They're completely different sports, because we do six apparatus. They do four. We do overlap on floor and vault, but we do very different routines on those events. Like, they're dancing, we're not. Our sport's more based on strength and agile movement. Theirs is more flexibility and basically poetry in motion.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, they're very different, but I'd say the mindset's the same of, like, just how you go about the sport.
Right.
Very different.
It is interesting, like, of all, I'm just thinking of all Olympic sports, there are very few Olympic sports where the women get more attention in the sport, maybe more financial opportunities, sponsorship type stuff. But gymnastics is one of the few sports where that actually happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I honestly think it's great because they are so good, and their Team USA women's gymnastics are so far ahead in the game that they deserve it. But it is hard to see because USA men's gymnastics has struggled so hard with funding. Like, I remember we had a year on the national team where we had no apparel at all. And if we did get apparel, it was brandless, and I think from just like Target or something, because it's all we could do.
I think that people think that all these athletes who are training and really close to making an Olympic team and these sports have unlimited budgets, but that's really not the case in this country at all.
In fact, it's the complete opposite. I'd say people who are pursuing the Olympic dreams are more successful if they're more adamant about finding sponsors or finding that funding. Like, that helps them so much. But no, there's no just major funding for Olympic athletes. It's specifically in these smaller sports. So it's kind of find your own path, like make your way there.
One area that I noticed that you're pretty active on is social media. I mean, you have a huge following on TikTok with like 230,000 followers, and You know, tons of followers on Instagram as well. And your videos are really awesome. Can you talk a little bit about that and the effort that goes into that and what yeah. has been really fun for you in that?
Yeah. It all started with this one video on TikTok. I was just messing around and I did a backflip into a plange, which ended up, there's a whole story behind that. And that video got on my page like 25 million views or something. And then
it's
like
crazy,
a bunch of different major news networks started posting it. It ended up getting like a few hundred million views. And I was just like, what am I doing? I don't know. So I kind of like accidentally stepped into this. I never had the goal of being famous. In fact, I never even wanted that. Like, that's stressful. But it ended up being really rewarding and a good sense of immediate gratification, because honestly, in gymnastics, you don't get a lot of that. Like, it's a lot of like just grind every single day. So it became a good outlet for me just to share who I am and just get like some props for all the work I was doing. And it ended up just me slowly gaining a good following on TikTok and Instagram. But it all because of that one video of me just doing a backflip and holding myself up on my hands.
And so what opportunities have come your way because of it? Because there's some power to it too.
Yeah. I ended up, like, it gained so much traction, this video, that I ended up trying to compete this skill, like, to get it named after me. And so I traveled to Europe to compete it, and then ended up getting a skill named after me. So because of social media, I now have my name etched in the gymnastics code of points. And also the social media stuff has led to sponsors and just helping me gain popularity and just have my name out there, because it's really important to have your name out there, because let's face it, gymnastics is not necessarily an objective sport as it seems, because humans are judging routines. So it's good to have a positive reputation online. And so that's really helped me. And it's helped me gain a sponsorship with Bonk Breaker and just this company called Fans Meet Idols. They help connect you to fans and then give products. So it's just helped me get a lot of just extra funding for my Olympic dream.
Yeah. And actually, it's funny. I was on that site earlier today, and you can buy like a Riley Luce hat, and you can buy t-shirts and all kinds of swag. It's really cool.
Yeah. It's funny. At Winter Cup, I saw someone wearing a shirt that I didn't know. I was like, wow, I feel like a professional athlete for real right now.
That's totally
cool. Someone wearing my name.
It's
so cool.
That's really cool. So for you, what would being a Paris Olympian be like? Like, where is that for you?
That's my lifelong goal. It would mean the absolute world to me. And I don't want to say that it would make my life complete, but it would be close.
It'd be a good start.
It'd be a really good start. Because it's a goal that seems a little bit, it's always seemed a little bit out of reach. And now just that I'm closer than ever, I just want to take advantage and go for it. And if I can do it, then I'll just know that I can do anything. But if I don't make it, then I'll know I did every single thing I could. I want to have no regrets at all during this process. I wear this band every single day, and I even compete with it. It just says, do one more than everyone else. And so I make sure to do that every single day. And so if I make this Olympic team, then I'm going to fight for a medal for Team USA. And after that, I'm going to just rest and be happy, because this goal is huge. And I know it's only 5 people in the country can make it. So I'll be very grateful.
That's awesome. I'll tell you what, I know of one other Olympian who has a silver medal, and her name is Shannon Barkey. She's from Tahoe, mogul skier. Oh. And that is her mantra as well. Just one more. She always did one more than everybody else that she was with. One more run, one more lift in the gym, one more everything. And she took that into the rest of her life too, no matter what she was doing. And I've always remembered that. I mean, like, it's who's going to do the most work. So it's make 4, do 8, and do one more.
Yep, exactly.
That's great. So what's a good way for people? Yeah. So what's a good way for people to keep up with you for the next couple of months?
Yes, I'll be active on social media at Riley Luce on Instagram. I don't post as much on TikTok, even though I should. But yeah, and just keep up to date with USA Gymnastics because I should be on the headlines there going to these international competitions. And yeah, just hopefully you'll see my name on that Olympic team, Riley Luce.
Thanks for listening. You can find our podcast, Dying to Ask, The Road to Paris, wherever podcasts are found. We're hearing from athletes and experts ahead of the games.